Here's how I look at it. I look at it that half of our fellowship have raised their kids. And half of our fellowship are in the process of doing that. That's kind of how I look at it. In fact, the numbers will tell you that half of us are doing one thing and half of us are doing the other. So in our body, it's kind of time for those of us who are older to shift gears. And I've been thinking a lot about this, and I was really looking forward to talking about this today. And I could have been in the other room talking to the younger people, but I deferred because I would rather be here with you guys. And the reason that I would is that it's a weird deal. You know, my experience in church life isn't really vast, okay? So you guys know I grew up as a little Lutheran, so I had all that stuff, you know, growing up. And then First Federated Church was where I saw old people, okay? People that were our age now. And I learned a lot watching them. You know, I learned some good things, and I also learned some not so good things watching them. One thing I felt that by and large, and what has unfolded for me as I've gotten older, is I realized that most of the older people that I've known have not had a very good understanding of the kingdom. And so consequently, when they get to 60 years old or 65 years old, it's about, you know, where you're going to travel. It's how you're going to make your life easier. It's, you know, getting everything implemented for your retirement. And I kind of resist that. I resist that idea, particularly biblically, because I always kind of go back to the scriptures and go, you know, is that really what was happening during the time of Paul and during the time of the apostles? And so I'm excited because this is going to happen now on a consistent basis where we're going to have a strong homes focus, because one of the things that we try to do is we try to fit everything in, you know, and that's always been frustrating to me. You know, it's like, I've used this analogy before. It's like the guy on Ed Sullivan with the plates. You know, you get the plates going, you got six or seven plates going, and then all of a sudden that one plate falls off. And that's how I felt for the last 30 or 40 years. And I'm starting to realize that because of where we are at as a body, that can change. And so that's made me think a lot about those of us who have raised our children and those of us who are raising our children and what they need, because that's one set of needs to be encouraged in. We kind of have a need to unlock some things that I'm not sure are very well modeled for us at all. And so I'd like to start that conversation today so that you can know that 9 out of 10 times when we get together in here and those guys go there, we're going to have this ongoing conversation. And it'll probably happen on a monthly basis for a while because of some of the things that we're trying to address. And so in thinking about that, I'd like you to turn over to Titus. Ezekiel this week, don't forget that. And we talked a little bit about, wisdom last week, about Lady Wisdom. I've gotten some feedback on that. Nobody's excommunicated me yet, so I'm feeling really good about that. We talked about idolatry and being enticed away from the fear of God, and then being immersed in stuff and recognition and self-gratification. See, you and I, because of our age, we're supposed to know better than to be immersed in stuff, recognition, self-gratification. And to those of us who continue, I mean, we're going to always be tempted in that, right? But those of us who continue to embrace those things, we're not as useful to the kingdom as people who have figured out that those things are not what our kingdom is all about. And so what's happening in the other room is they're having conversations about how do we build a kingdom home and how do we pull ourselves away from stuff, which is hard because where they're at in life, everything's about stuff, right? Because you either don't have enough or you're trying to get the stuff that you need to do what you need to do. Or recognition, that's what a lot of the work world is about, right? Every job I've ever been around is all about, you know, where you fit in the pecking order, and I've heard you guys talk about the corporate jobs you have and people who own companies, and it just doesn't seem to change much all the way through because people seem to be driven by recognition because they want to be seen as a success. And then this one I'm really concerned about related to self-gratification, which is what I'm really hopeful for about us, is that we know better because we know that whatever kind of self-gratification we're talking about is not going to result in anything significant at all. It's going to be like the wind. But younger people don't know that. And so now we find ourselves at a totally different point than we were at 30 years ago or even 25 years ago, where self-gratification has now moved into the center of our culture. And it has so many faces. Remember, I've taught before on the many faces of Baal and how you could go to different communities and Baal would look a little bit different way, and then you'd go to northern Israel and you'd look a different way. And he basically could adapt to any kind of an environment. And that's what we're in right now. And as I watch my grandkids, I realize that this self-gratification issue has come to full bloom or full flower or full death, whatever you want to call it, where you watch your grandkids and you watch how many things that they can grab a hold of. And I go back to when I think about growing up and I think about, okay, my big choices were, do I stay inside or do I go outside? And if I go outside, these things may happen. And it really was a list of about 5 or 10 things. And if I stayed inside, on the top of the list was I would probably have to clean my room, which is why I always went outside. So you have pretty simple choices, right? That's not the world we're living in right now. You're not living in that world right now. Our kids aren't living in that world. And our grandkids aren't living in that world. So I get excited thinking about, okay, here I have my kingdom friends. We've stuck with it. We have tried our best to not get attached to stuff. We've tried our best to not be recognized for the wrong kinds of things. And we've tried our best to not just live our lives for self-gratification. And to me, that is a treasure. That is a treasure that we have. Now, a bunch of our older people right now are in classes, because they're teaching and they're investing in younger people. There's people in the nursery right now. I think Bernie got snagged into the nursery today because somebody didn't show up or whatever. And that's the nature of it. But here we are now with this golden opportunity. I'm 67, 77. I think I got about 15 years, Lord willing, I got 15 years of active whatever. That's how I'm looking at it. And I don't feel like bad about that. I'm kind of relieved. I'm kind of relieved that if I only have to run this race for another 15 years, I'm okay with that because I watched my dad die and I watched my mom die and I've seen the end of life. And if God wants to punch my ticket whenever he wants to punch it, I'm okay with that. But that doesn't mean that I can't maximize these years that I have left, whether it's 5 or 10 or 15 years. And what's neat about that is I think we can maximize that together as a community. And that's why I look forward to these conversations with you once every month, once every 6 weeks, about how do we maximize what we've learned and who we are in relationship to what's going on. I don't know if you noticed, but we have a lot of younger people hanging around right now. Now, today was kind of special because Emma had she won the moped today for so many people that she brought from camp. You know, those were all people that worked at Hidden Acres together. And I told her she won the moped, and I don't think she knew what a moped was. So I'm going to have to go follow up on that. So, you know, right now we have an influx of 20-somethings and a little bit younger and whatever. So that's happening right now. And some of that is just because, you know, some initiative is being taken. Some of it is because God is moving in that way. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, Daniel is starting to do some of the things that he's doing. I mean, he's learning how to communicate. He's learning how to teach. Why Daniel? Well, Daniel's got a great heart for the word. You know, of all of the kids that have grown up, you know, in the youth group. And there have been numbers of them that have loved the word. Well, here's Daniel, and he's actually decided to come back. Not by any coaxing, not by any kind of strategy, just by God bringing him back. And so we have this opportunity. And we have an opportunity together to take a look at who we are now and look at who we're going to be over this next 10 or 15 years. Because this is really important. This is important to us, but it's also important to everybody in that other room right now that has teenagers that are graduating or they're in high school. And, you know, people like the Belzers and like the Schweitzers and all the different people who are coming to the end of that phase of your life, you know, and it is a phase, right? And it's okay. That's a good thing as we go through each of the different phases in our lives, some more extenuating than others. So, like we talked about last week, whatever is consuming your spirit is what is folly unless God is consuming your spirit, right? So that's the conversation we're having with younger people. But I thought about that a little bit further in light of Titus chapter 2. And so if you turn with me there. So to give some quantification to this going boldly where no man has gone before, to use a cultural metaphor that no longer applies to anybody. It's kind of like the moped thing. Let's boldly go where nobody has ever gone before. What? Titus chapter 2, verse 1. But as for you, Timothy, somewhere in the middle kind of guy, I don't know if Timothy ended up with a family. I don't know how much younger than Paul he was, but he was in the middle. Now, he was dealing with people who were younger, and Paul was older. There's no doubt about it. You can just kind of put the picture together. But as for you, speak the things which are fitting for sound doctrine. Okay? That applies to older people. That applies to younger people. That applies to everybody, even the people in the middle. But he's specific then about what this is supposed to look like for our group. Older men are to be temperate, dignified, sensible, sound in faith, sound in love, sound in perseverance. Those are the character qualities. Many of them you can see in the qualifications for an elder, but those are the qualifications for older men. That's supposed to be the example in a body. So when I rub shoulders, like this weekend, I went down to the cabin and everybody with me was younger than me. And Chad and I were the old guys, and there were six young guys, and I'm always looking through this prism. How can I translate temperance, being dignified, sensible — dignified is the hardest part for me — sound in faith, in love, in perseverance? How can I bring that into those relationships, not just to say, well, you're supposed to be temperate, you know, you're supposed to be sensible. Yeah, that's old school. I'll tell you right now, that doesn't work anymore. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about a little bit here. It's not just a matter of telling people what they need to do. So that's the man. Temperate, dignified, sensible, sound in faith, in love, sound in perseverance. Older women, likewise, are to be reverent or respectful in their behavior. Not malicious gossips, nor enslaved to much wine, teaching what is good. Sometimes I just need to teach about these two passages and just the words that are there and the concept that's getting there. Because it's easy to look at this and go, oh, yeah, all women sit around and drink wine, right? And so that's why it's written this way. It's not at all. It's totally extracted from a culture that relates to men and women, and there are principles in it that go across the board. Not malicious gossips, nor a slave to much wine, teaching what is good, so that they may encourage the young women to love their husbands. Now think how big this is. So they may encourage the young women to love their own husbands. You don't have to have been married for 50 years to teach a woman how to do this. All you have to do is have had your eyes open to God over the years that you have been raising your family. Encourage the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sensible, to be pure, workers at home, kind, being subject to their own husbands, so that the word of God will not be dishonored. Now, if I read that in a woman's rally, yeah, what kind of crap would I get for even just even opening my mouth and saying those phrases? But in our culture, it's exactly what men and women need. So we're going to talk about that as things unfold, because we have to translate that over into, well, how do we do that? And I love this too, because, you know, it doesn't like, okay, you old people do your job. Likewise, urge the young man. And you almost get the sense here it's a little bit broader topic. So urge the youngers to be sensible. In all things, show yourself to be an example of good deeds with purity and doctrine, dignified, sound in speech, which is beyond reproach, so that the opponent will be put to shame, having nothing bad to say about us. And that is the standard for impacting people as you mentor them and as you teach them. As we work on that together, that's what we want to end up with, okay? We want people who are sensible in how they live, an example of good deeds, purity and doctrine, understanding what truth is, dignified, sound in speech, which is beyond reproach, so that the opponent will be put to shame. Because what are young men supposed to be doing? They're supposed to be overcoming the evil one, right? Do you know anything about that? Do you know anything about overcoming the evil one? I think you know a lot more about it than the people sitting in the other room right now. You have to. We have to, because of what we've been through together. So, today, basically, and we can talk about that. I've got everybody divided out into two mailing lists. I can mail the older people anytime I want. I can mail the younger people. I can put them together and mail to everybody at one time. And this is it's incredible. I mean, the abilities that I have technologically, you know, are just huge. And so the idea that we together would have a conversation about this, and then as we define what God has taught us, and begin that process of translating. Now, some of you are thinking of your own kids right now, right? You're thinking, some of my kids really don't care what I have to say about God, right? But you know what they do care about? They do care about how you continue to follow God and how you continue to bring God to them, even if they don't even know enough to appreciate it. So I look at the last 15 years, and my kids have been through some tough crap. Each one of them, their own stuff. And as I have come along them, and Bernie's come along them side by side, we keep reminding ourselves that it's the long look. It's the big picture. It's where our children end up, and it's where our grandchildren end up that really makes a difference. And who do they have that is going to love them more than we're going to love them? Nobody. Nobody. And they may find a spouse, and if they're fortunate, that spouse may love them and their children may love them that much, but who's going to love them for a lifetime? You know, you and me. And who's going to love their friends? And who's going to come alongside of them? So that's part of the conversation. But where I went with this, because it relates to Lady Wisdom, and the wisdom of God and experiencing the wisdom of God, what does that look like? And so I've been thinking about spiritual warfare, and I've been thinking about conversations with my grandsons and my granddaughter and my kids and the millennials I hang out with and people like you that I hang out with, experienced, wise, handsome, good looking. And basically, I've thought about three different categories that as an older man, I can take those principles that we just looked at, and that Bernie can take the principles that she is focusing on, because we're focusing on those together, and how can we translate these over into the relationships that we have? Whether it's the waitress we're talking to over at Hy-Vee, or whether it's, you know, the disgruntled neighbor that's coming over and saying, "Why do you burn leaves?" You know, whatever. This is somebody else. That's somebody else's story, not mine. And so I'd like to think about these three things. And I'd like to spend the remaining time together asking you the question and starting this conversation. Because this board's amazing, too. We can start our conversation. We can flip it over, and nobody will know it's there. And then when we come back, we'll pull it out. Ignorance, impurity, passivity. These are the three things that, as I was praying and as I was thinking about, are the younger people that I know and the younger person that I was, I think about how ignorant I was. There were so many things I didn't know. One of my favorite sayings is, you just don't know what you don't know, right? It's so true. You don't know what you don't know. But in that process of me becoming wiser, what happened? You know, God said, hey, Dave, I have spoken. I have spoken. And not only have I have spoken, I have moved heaven and earth to allow you to be able to hear me. And what did that do to my ignorance? Well, it put it on a track to become something different than it would have looked. And if you haven't had a conversation with somebody who's our age and who has never sought to please God, but they've gone after the things that we were talking about a little bit earlier, shallow, right? Empty, right? Hopeless, right? Yeah, because that's what life apart from God is. So ignorance. So I ask myself the question, how can I help people that are younger than me not be ignorant? You know, not, and I wouldn't use that word, you know? You're ignorant, you know? It's not like that at all. It's like, I know you don't know. The only way you're going to find out is not just by listening to me, although you can get some things out of that, but by listening to God. Do you have God's ear? And does God have your ear so that you can live a life that is increasing in understanding, increasing in wisdom? You know, wisdom is the ability to put knowledge into practice. Knowledge is great, but I've found that I can sit and talk to people for hours after hours from a sermonizing perspective, but until I sit down and have breakfast with them or coffee with them and ask them particular questions, there's no guarantee that the lofty principles, the knowledge, is being turned into wisdom. People need help with that. That just doesn't happen to people. And not only do they need help, they need somebody who cares about them to help that process happen. So I thought about that, and I thought about ignorance, and I thought about, you know, instead of just saying, you should do this, don't do this, you should do this, don't do this, I was thinking about the whole nature of how Jesus, I mean, Jesus did some of that, but he was always inviting people. He was inviting people. He was extending invitations. So that's the first thing I'd like you to challenge you to, is that I feel like I've been learning a lot about inviting people rather than telling people. I was really good, because I'm an oldest, I was really good at telling people, this is what you need to do, because I could see it, you know, because oldest know everything, right? Right? Of course. There you go. So ignorance and the invitation to knowledge, so that knowledge can result in wisdom. So for instance, got together with these younger guys this weekend. I could have taught something about the kingdom. I could have taught something about one of the great things I've learned. And I said, hey, why don't we read the book of Daniel together? So, and they're over on their phones, and I got my Bible, although two or three of my disciples were there. I think they had Bibles too. And so we start reading together, and we start talking, and they read too. You know, they're reading, and they're going through, and they're reading. And so when it got to the part 2 hours later where I said, well, what's the takeaway from this? It was beautiful, wasn't it, Chad? I mean, it was really totally awesome because of the things that They were connecting and they were seeing because they had been invited into Daniel's life. And not just let's read about Daniel, but hey, we want to be men of God, right? Let's check these guys out. Let's check out Daniel and Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego. And what do we learn about being men of God from those men? So that invitation and being creative about that invitation with young men and young women, and how do you draw people in? The second area is impurity. And remember what I was saying about what kids are experiencing? I can remember in order for me to find porn, I had to find it in one of my family friends had collected comic books, but he had a very special box, you know, like in the bottom in the attic that nobody knew about. And so for me to find out, that was I was exposed to that at a pretty early age. Didn't see him real often, which was probably fortunate. But what did I have to do in order to be exposed to porn? I had to go into a Quick Trip, or they didn't call them that then. You had to go in and buy a dirty magazine, you know. That was a huge, huge detriment to that desire in my life. What are our kids experiencing? What are our grandkids experiencing? They have seamless access, not only just to dirty pictures, but to disturbing things that are at their fingertips. And I don't know about you, I didn't ever immerse myself in porn really far, but it's almost like you take a snapshot, and the snapshot doesn't ever leave your brain. It's really quite breathtaking. So I'm thinking about that. I'm thinking, well, how do I help my grandsons? And how do I help younger people to deal with that? And what I'm doing right now is I'm formulating, how do I even help them have a biblical conversation about that? How do I explain to them what happened with the sons of God coming down and cohabiting with the daughters of men? How do I explain how that's all tied into Eve? But more importantly, how do I teach them and then help them to develop strategies with their lives? Because what happens to somebody whose life is overcome with porn, with guilt, with fear, whatever? There's a big list. It's not just porn. I'm using it because you can see it. I mean, it's a practical example. What happens? Yeah? When a young man who wants to please God has those hooks inside of him, what does it do to his spirit? It absolutely holds him back because he feels guilty, he feels ashamed, and most of all, he feels afraid that it's never, ever going to change. Okay? So that's the second issue. And I've thought about this as we've been talking about warfare. You know, I do have friends, male friends, that don't struggle with porn. You know, it's hard for me to believe it, but I believe them, you know. But by and large, this is something, this impurity issue, and it's not just in sexual impurity. It's like spreading out into everything that we do. Why is that? Well, it's so that Satan can have a foothold, because the last thing he wants is my grandsons, third generation believers, to take him seriously and live in a way that would be pleasing to God. It's the last thing he wants, which is why I think our kids become targets related to that. So that's the second area, ignorance, impurity. And the third area is passivity. This is really coming to the forefront now more. You're seeing it. You can see it in politics. You can see it in Hollywood. The whole idea of men being men, which, you know, I get it. You know, some of that 60s crap, I'm so glad that we don't have to live under that anymore, you know, about what a man was supposed to be, okay? And I've been Hugh Hefner to death growing up, you know, and just that idea of being macho and being that kind of a leader. I'm so glad we're beyond that. That's okay with me. But I don't want my grandsons to be wusses. I don't want them to not understand what it is to be a man, to step up like Adam didn't in the world that they live in, with the wife that they marry. See, very hard to talk about this stuff, you know, like when my grandsons are sitting here, right? Very hard to talk about this stuff when younger people are here because they're fighting those things. You have to have it almost a different kind of a conversation. We can be frank and honest with each other, right? We know the score. We know what's going on. So basically, the conclusion I've come to for us is that maybe this is the best time of our lives. Maybe because we have the experiences that we have, maybe because we have actually not only gotten knowledge, because we've all been pretty serious about following God, we've taken that knowledge and we have experienced wisdom. And it all looks different for all of us. You know, we're wise in different ways. We've had different experiences. We have different backgrounds. But wisdom has many faces to it. And so for us to take the wisdom that we have and invest it, I think, is a remarkable opportunity. Now, if you want to worry about other stuff, and that's still a hassle for me, sometimes I go, I can't believe how many entanglements I have. You know, I think of this every year when I put my boats away. You know, I've got 3 fishing boats and I've got kayaks and whatever. And it's all for camp. You know, I have it for camp. That's why I have it all. But you can either choose to have a life where you go, well, I've done my work and now I'm going to glide. Or they can work it out. They can figure it out for themselves. I had to figure it out. They can figure it out. There's all these different attitudes of older people. Or you can say, wait a minute, what's my role now? What's my job now? And I'll tell you, I think 90% of it is because we understand our knees still work. It's why we should be on our knees before God on behalf of the people that we know and the people that we love. And that group can continue to grow. You know, Roland and Alisa, I didn't know them at all. A year and a half ago, two years ago. And he was down at this retreat and we had some great experiences together, some funny things related to him. And as we were having it, I thought, oh, I'm starting to love these guys. I didn't love Brandon right away. You know, as he sure hasn't loved me right away. You know, but now I'm starting to love Brandon, and I'm starting to love Marissa, and I'm starting to love Azzy. You know, so I have this opportunity, and that's all I'm saying. And so I want you to think about those three areas. I want you to think about what it is we're supposed to do about ignorance, impurity, and passivity. And maybe we'll use the whiteboard next time we're together. At least we don't have anything to hide between now and the next time we're together.